So, firstly, I want to thank the Blaschkos for opening their home.
Anytime.
Really, really appreciate it. Very, very nice spread. This year is going to be for Fuashlema for Sar Gittel Bas Yachad Freida. Our learning should be for Fuashlema for her. And it's nice to always get together to be able to have opportunities to learn Torah, and especially coming up, holiday of Lag BaOmer, of the Chag. Be able to learn something about this, certain times it could be one of the most superficial holidays to a certain extent, and it also could be something that people don't even realize is even going on until you realize that there's no Tachanun on that day. And so it's good to be able to learn about it, to understand a little bit deeper about it, and to gain something from it. I remember hearing that in Eretz Yisrael, after Pesach, right after Pesach, that the kids start collecting wood for bonfires for Lag BaOmer. They go around, they start collecting whatever they can. Sometimes there's a chair that's like half broken, a little shaky. It's like, okay, let's just smash this up, this will count, we'll use this. And people are very into the bonfires. Bonfires are probably the first association we have when we think about Lag BaOmer. And when it comes to fire is something that's It's very unique. It's very unique in halacha in a certain sense. We know that, for example, on Yontif, even though we're allowed to cook, you're not allowed to light a fire. That's like too much in terms of violation of halacha, even for cooking. We know that when it comes to Chanukah, of course, we make a very, very big deal about lighting the neros, about the fire there. And there are plenty of times, we'll see some more, where fire is a very prominent role. And I want to share a story. The story in the first source here I heard from my Rebbe Rav Moshe Tzvi Weinberg. He gave this here a number of years ago. Not on this exact topic, but somewhat related to this. On August 5th, 1949, in Montana, there was an incident known as the Man Gulch Fire. It was a fire that was a wildfire that was burning down forests in Montana. And they sent in a group of smoke jumpers. Smoke jumpers is an elite unit of firefighters who are specifically designed to deal with wildfires, and you have to be so extremely, extremely trained in order to do so, because you are literally parachuting out of an airplane into the wildfire. And so on that day, on August 5th, 1949, so the leader of this platoon was named Wagner Dodge. Wagner Dodge and the men that he was with, the unit he was with, they realized that this fire was out of control. And they realized that the tactics and the measures that they were using to try to extinguish the fire, that it wasn't working, the fire was spreading and spreading. And the fire, from where they were on a certain hill, they were able to see the fire coming closer to them. And they knew that the flames were going faster than they were. And so most of the men just started running for their lives. Even though, of course, they were trained, there was only a certain amount that they were able to do to help, and then it came to a point of saving themselves. And Wagner Dodge had the following thought. He told some of the people he was with, he said, "Come here, come with me, and trust me." And he took out a match, and he lit the dry grass in front of him, which was, so the fire was behind him going towards them, and right in front of him, he lit the grass so that it started going the other way. So now they were, in a certain sense, surrounded by fire. Most of the men who said he was there, they either didn't hear him because of the inferno, or they said, "This guy's crazy, we're getting out of here, we're just going to run and make a run for it." He lit the fire, and when the dry grass burned, and I was totally, totally dry there in front of him, he lay down right there. Lay down there on the spot. And there were only two other people, I believe, who did this with him. And what ended up happening was, as the fire was coming up the hill going towards them, because the grass was now burnt already in front of them, the fire went totally, completely around them. And the fire just kept going past them. And 13 of the firefighters that day died. And he and two others were the only survivors. And this method that he thought of right there in the moment is known as an escape fire. And it's something that's used by firefighters till this day. And when it comes to that story, so the lesson from it is that there are plenty of times in this world, there are plenty of fires. And the fires are a plethora of different things that make it harder for us to be able to serve Hashem in a real way. And these fires are coming towards us at a faster rate than we could try to escape them. But sometimes we could take a fire from ourselves in a different avenue and be able to use that fire in order to escape it. So our fire for trying to have passion to be able to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to help us from the fire of society that's trying to stop us as an adherence to stop serving Hashem. And I was at a Friday night oneg with students from my school, and they were playing this game, this trivia game. It's all Jewish related, different themes. And they asked me the following question. They said, if you could ask Hashem one thing, what would it be? One question, you get one answer. It's a very good question. Sure, there are a lot of different answers. And honestly, had I thought more, maybe I would have come up with a different question. But the question I asked, and something that I'm really curious about, that I will never know as I'm alive, is, what is my scorecard? It seems somewhat simple, where, I mean, I hopefully know when I'm doing a mitzvah, and I hopefully know when I'm doing an aver. Of course, there's areas of shogeg, of negligence, where you might accidentally do an aver, and there are times you accidentally perform a mitzvah if you drop money and poor person picks it up, so you get a mitzvah tzedakah. But typically speaking, we should know what we're doing. But it's not that simple, because Hashem knows each of our potential, and Hashem knows how we're supposed to do, and not every mitzvah is the same, and not every sin is the same. We don't know the exact cheshbon that Hashem has, and I wish I could see my scorecard. I wish I knew exactly how I was doing. And there's a Kedushas Levi from Levi Yitzchak, where he gives a certain insight into being able to seeing, not like your scorecard of like, yeah, you have this amount of points, but to see if what you're doing is pleasing in the eyes of Hashem. And he says as follows at the end of, in the first source, at the end of the first line, Dihine, ha'adam bi'avoda sol la'Hashem yisbarach, b'torah v'mitzvos, maybe tana gadol l'mala. If a person serving Hashem with Torah mitzvos who could bring great enjoyment and pleasure to Hashem. Kshadam rotza lida im Hashem yisbarach yeshlo tanug mevoda. So if a person wants to know if Hashem is enjoying this person's service of him, habachina hu alzeh, the test is as follows. Here's what you should see. Im adam roa shaliba boer keish umislahiv tamid lavodo. So if a person sees that his or her heart is on fire to be able to serve Hashem, I'm excited. I have enthusiasm to be able to do mitzvot, to be able to do what I can, to wake up, to daven, to be able to keep Shabbos, to keep kosher. V'yesh lo cheshek v'ratzon be'avodas habore. We have a desire to serve Hashem. As bevadai muchach, you should be certain. Shehashem yisbarach yesh lo tano me'avodaso, that Hashem is enjoying what you're doing. If you are enjoying it, if you're excited about it, then you can be guaranteed Hashem's excited about it too. Ulekach mesayin lo min hashamayim, and Hashem will give you help. V'sholchin lo machshavos kedushos l'soch libo, and Hashem will give you holy thoughts into your heart. So this idea of fire, of having a passion, having a drive, he says, he uses the words like, that you're on fire to serve Hashem. When we have that, then that's a great sign. And of course, it's not so simple to constantly have it. But it is important, of course, to try to minimally aspire to it, and ideally to have it certainly at moments, to be able to think about certain times where we're able to be excited about certain things, to have a certain freshness to these mitzvos. And when it comes to this idea of fire, so the Torah itself was given on Har Sinai. We're gonna celebrate Shavuos in a few weeks. The Torah was given through a mountain that was filled with fire. And it says in Source 2, in the second part, Pasuk, in the bold, V'har Sinai Ashan Kuvo. Har Sinai was filled with smoke. Mipnei Asher Yarad Alav Hashem Ba'esh, as Hashem descended upon it with fire. V'yal Ashanu Ke'ashan HaKibshan Echarad Kala Har Me'od. And everyone was trembling. Everyone was scared because of this. And there's a Rosh Yeshiva of the Mir in Brooklyn. His name is Rav Shmuel Birnbaum. Rav Shmuel Birnbaum was known for his hasmada in Torah, for his intense diligence in learning Torah. And just to give you a little bit of background about him, he was in Shanghai with the Mir Yeshiva. He was originally learning in the Mir, where it originated. He had to flee with them during the Holocaust to Shanghai. And from Japan, they ended up coming to America. And I heard a story that when the boat he was on was passing the Golden Gate Bridge, so the people were excited, like seeing that landmark. They said, "Look, it's the Golden Gate Bridge." And at that time, so Shmuel was learning probably a Gemara. Let's assume learning a Gemara. He had his head in the Gemara. And someone says, "Shmuel, look, it's the Golden Gate Bridge." He says, "I'm learning Torah." He says, "You will only have one time in your entire life to be able to see the Golden Gate Bridge now. You're going to sit and learn Torah?" So he responded right there, like that, and he said, "I'm going to have only one time in my life to learn Torah when I could have seen the Golden Gate Bridge." And he's known as someone who has a tremendous passion for Torah. He was known also that he wouldn't miss a seder to go to a wedding, and if the students in the Mir wanted him to go to the wedding, they'd have to make it a little bit later so that he could attend. And he was a no-nonsense person, a fiery person about Torah. And so he says the following, he asked the following question. He says, "How come it is that Hashem gave the Torah through fire, through this intense scene? Why can't, like, if one were to just imagine what it, I'll say should be, obviously, but what you would have pictured, like, a nice, beautiful, sunny day, right? Little flowers growing on the mountain, maybe deers prancing, and like, okay, here comes the Torah, it's beautiful." And it was the total opposite. So why is that? So he says as follows, and this is like his personality. He said the Torah had to be given with fire, because Torah without fire isn't Torah. So he says the Torah isn't learned with a certain fervor, a certain intensity, it's not Torah. Of course it's Torah, but it's not real Torah. It's not the intensity. And plenty of times where we have to try to regain that passion, that enthusiasm for serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu, for having these mitzvos. And there's a Gemara in Sukkah in Source 3 that speaks about different tzaddikim and the intense levels of learning and madrigos that they had. And it tells us about a student of Hillel. It says, "Amru alav al Yonatan ben Uziel." It says about him, "B'shah sheyoshev osek b'Torah," that when he was sitting and he was learning Torah, "Kol of shaporeach alav miyad nisraf." That whenever, imagine him sitting and learning Torah, if a bird flew over him, the bird was extinguished with fire. Which is a wild scene just to imagine that. Whatever that means. So he's sitting there and he's learning Torah, and right above him a bird comes, and the Torah is so intense that a fire goes and kills that bird that's flying over him. And so the Ritva says in the next verse, Perush, explanation, was his learning Torah have to do with the fire and the bird getting killed? Perush, ahayu hadvarim kemo shenitnu b'Sinai, sha'ish haita sholetes. That it was mamash like Har Sinai, where the Torah was given with fire, such intensity, and here he was learning Torah on such a high level. Ki'ilu, like it was, like he just got like on Har Sinai, that someone flew over it, it was mamash like a fire literally came and took away that bird. And the next source, Rashi says, how exactly did this, he explains exactly how this happened, how the bird get caught on fire. Shehayu malachei hasharis mitkabsim seviva v'lishma divrei Torah mipiv. Because what was it? It was the angels. The angels used to gather above his head to hear the words of Torah. And when you encounter the angel, boom, that was fire. Like, mom is so intense. So he's learning Torah such intensity. And I was thinking that Alpi Jush, of course, there's a special mitzvah, and certain idea that when the Kohanim gave the korbanos, so they had to light the fire on the Mizbeach, and then they had to burn the korban on the Mizbeach. So that seems, of course, very posh and obvious that if you're going to have a korban consumed on the Mizbeach, you have to light a fire in order to have that animal consumed. It's actually not clear like that at all, because we're actually told that how is it consumed? It was consumed from a fire from a Kodesh Baruch Hu. A fire, in a certain sense, an invisible fire came down and consumed the korban. And so we're asked, so why then do we have to light it? So the explanation is, we can't rely on the miracle of the Kodesh Baruch Hu. And that miracle that Hashem did, even though Hashem truly consumed it through fire that He created, but we have to do our part. We have to conceal the nes of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. A lot of important ideas about concealing Hashem's miracles. But I was thinking, one idea is that if fire represents our efforts and our passion, that was a korban is, as the Ramban says in the beginning of Sefer Vayikra, right? It's like, we should be up there instead of the korban. I made a mistake, so all of a sudden I get to offer an animal instead of myself. We have to view it as if we're up there, and we're giving something, at least for Hashem. So minimally, we should be the ones, of course, a Kohen on our behalf, but we should be the ones to light the fire. We should be the ones who ignite something, who put in some effort, who show Hashem that this is us, this is our excitement and our efforts into doing this korban. And so now we come to the fire of Lag BaOmer. The fire of Lag BaOmer specifically is mostly associated, so typically with two people, the Chag. It's associated with Shimon Bar Yochai, the Rashbi. It's also associated with Rabbi Akiva. We're going to see just brief ideas about each of them. The Rashbi specifically about fire, Rabbi Akiva is more focusing on the passion component that will help us understand this a little bit better. And the Shimon Bar Yochai, the famous story about him, I'm going to say a lot of the story out there, and we'll read some of it inside. The famous story about him is no coincidence that is recorded on Daf Lama Gimel, Lag BaOmer, Daf Lama Gimel. So it doesn't mention Lag BaOmer here, but this is the main idea about the Rashbi.
Is it a coincidence?
So I'm saying it's not a coincidence, but it happens to be. This is on Daf Lama Gimel in Gemara Shabbos. And the Rashbi, we're told, he passed away, his yahrzeit is on Lag BaOmer. And on his deathbed, right before he passed away, He revealed the secrets of the Torah. He revealed the Zohar to his students, and that's part of the, of course, the main celebration to Lag BaOmer. So the story is that there were three Chachamim, Rashbi, Shimon Bar Yochai being one of them, who was talking about the Romans and about the marketplaces and the things that they did. And the Rashbi said that they do terrible things. You know why they made the marketplaces? It was all for the zonos, for prostitutes. And he said things totally which were accurate about why the thought process to why the Romans did certain things, saying that it was all for their indulgence, all for selfish reasons. And word came out that the Rashbi said this, and the Romans said, we have to kill this guy. He had a death wish on him, and he had to flee. And so first, he and his son Rabbi Lazar, they went to the Beis Medrash. They were hiding in the Beis Medrash. There must be something that they know that we don't know, because if I was looking for a rabbi, I would probably go to the Beis Medrash. But that was not, and they were accurate, that they actually didn't look for them there at first. And they weren't being looked for, and they were in hiding. And then what ended up happening is that they found out that the searches were being intensified, and that maybe the Romans were gonna have more guards, specifically on this task of finding the Rashbi and killing him. And so at the time, his wife was giving him food, providing him with food while he was in the Beis Medrash. And then he decided we have to leave, he and his son. He didn't want to tell his wife in case the Romans came and tortured his wife, and then she'd have to reveal where they were going to be. So he didn't tell her. And I assume he told her that he was leaving. Whether he did or didn't, I'm sure she obviously figured that out. And he went with his son, and they went to a cave. And when they got to the cave, so a miracle happened. And the first bold, I'm not going to read the first bold section, but there was a carob tree that was there and a spring of water. And they were able to sustain themselves throughout all of this. For 12 years they were in the cave. Literally, pretty much all they were doing was learning Torah. And he and his son. And then, by the second section of the bold, At Eliyahu, so Eliyahu came. Now Eliyahu wasn't they didn't know it was Eliyahu. Eliyahu was disguised as a regular person, and he was standing specifically outside the cave, as if he didn't know that Rashbi was inside the cave. And he says as follows, V'kam apischa demarasi. He stood at the opening to the cave. Amar, and he said, Man lodiya lebar yochai, demes kesar ubatal gzirasei. Who's going to tell, he screams, who's going to tell Rav Shimon bar Yochai that the Caesar died and the decree to kill him is done? It's finished. No one's looking for him anymore. No one's gonna harm him. And so obviously Rashbi and his son hear this. Okay. We're done. We could finally leave. Nafku. So they left the cave. So what'd they see? Chazu imshe deka karve vizare. They saw people and they were plowing and they were planting. They were working the field. These are farmers. And imagine for 12 years straight, all he was doing was learning Torah. And the Rashbi, someone in Gemar Brachos, who speaks about how a person has spent their entire day and night, learning Torah. And the Gemar asks, but how are you gonna have food for yourself? How are you gonna have any money? And he says, when we learn Torah, Hashem's gonna provide for us. Through the other nations, they're gonna help us out. And he says, famously, he says, if we have to plant in time of planting and harvest in time of harvesting, he says, Torah Mate Alev, what's going to be with the Torah if we're working all day? And he was so passionate, so intense about learning. And so he sees these people working the land after 12 years of him just learning straight. Amar Manichin, and sorry. So Nakur Chaz Enche Dekar Karve Vizar. So Amar Manichin Chai Olam Oskim Chai Shah. So he says, these people are abandoning the ultimate world. They're not learning Torah. They're abandoning their Olam Haba just for the pleasures of this world, to be engrossed in this world. So what happened? Like Cyclops from X-Men, Kol Makom Shunosnu Neinehen Mia Nisraf. Wherever he looked, it burnt up with fire. So it was like an intense scene where this whole, the whole field where this person was just totally burnt up because of the Rashbi. It's intensity from his eyes, from the Torah, from what he saw. Now, it happens to be, in general, of course, passion is an amazing thing. Fire is a great thing, but sometimes it's a little too intense. And over here, it's too intense even for Kadosh Baruch Hu. The Gemara continues, Yatzta Baskal. And the Baskal came out, V'amar lahem, and said to them, L'charivo l'mi yatzatzam? You came out of the cave just to destroy my world? That's why you're here, to now make... He says, Chizu l'maraschem, get back in there. You have to go back in there. They went back in there. And they were there. They stayed there for another year. And then if you go to the next bolt, so Yatzta Baskal, the Amra, to Umer Arashem. You could go out of the cave now again. Act 2. Nafku, so they went out. And what happened? Kol Hecha de Havamachi Rabbi Elazar, Havamasi Rabbi Shimon. His son still had that intensity. His son still, his eyes were burning up the place. But whenever the Rashbi looked at that place, it was healed and it was fixed. So, pretty intense stuff. And the Gemara continues, I'll say it outside. The Gemara says that they saw, right then, it was Erev Shabbos, and they saw a man running. An older man, he was running with Hadassim, with two Hadassim. He says, what are you doing? And he says, these are for Shabbos. Covered Shabbos, flowers for Shabbos. So he said, why do you have two of them? He says, one for Zachar, one for Shamar. The two words the Torah uses to describe Shabbos. And so, one beautiful idea I heard, that when it comes to the Arba Minim, the Esrog, Hadassim, and Arovs, that each of them have a corresponding body part. And the Hadassim corresponds to the eyes. And over here, this is Rashbi, after his eyes were too much, too intense the first time, he had to go back in. The second time, his eyes healed with the damages his sons did. Now his eyes are better, and here he is, this person running with Hadassim right before Shabbos. Another side, important point about this Gemara, is that Rashbi could see from here that a person could take the physical world, these Hadassim, which the first time when it came to planting things, he was not so happy about. But he sees that a person could take it and use it to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You could use it for Shabbos, you could use this for flowers, Kavod Shabbos, Keneged Shamar, Keneged Zachar. And so the passion of the Rashbi is something that we're supposed to certainly emulate as much as we can, to be as passionate about serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu, He has certain kanayas about him where he has a certain intensity to not let anything go. Maybe too much to the extreme of not allowing those people to plow and sow the field. But certainly it came from a pure place. It's certainly important that sometimes there are plenty of Jews who have different viewpoints than us and certain strong views, but it's important to always realize that a lot of times their views are usually coming from pure places. It's just a question of what's the MS, how should a person serve Hashem? And there are different ways, different drop them into serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So that's the Rashbi. And now let's go into Rabbi Akiva, which we're going to see also certainly ties into the Rashbi. The Gemara in Yevamos in Tzanach Beis, on Beis, tells us as follows. Rabbi Akiva Omer, Rabbi Akiva said, Lama Torah b'yelduso, yomlo Torah b'zeknuso. I taught Torah when I was young, and I taught Torah when I was old. Hayu lo talmidim b'yelduso, yulo talmidim b'zeknuso, shenemar b'boker zera zaracha b'gomer. Says you should have students when you're young and when you're old. Amru, and he said, Shneimasar elef zugim talmidim hayulo, the Rabbi Akiva, migivas ad antifaras. He had 12,000 pairs, 12,000 chavrusas, right? So 24,000 students that spanned this large geographical area. And they're all learning under Rabbi Akiva, v'kula mesu v'perach echad, and they all died at one time, v'pnei shalu nagu kavod zalazeh, because they didn't give honor, they didn't treat each other properly. V'haya ha'olam shamim, and the world was desolate, the world was silent, all those voices of Torah, the words of Torah, that are now shut. The world was science. Asha bar Rabbi Akiva. Till Rabbi Akiva came, Eitzel Rabbi Husseinu Shabedarim, to the rabbis in the south, Vishana lahem, and he taught them Torah. Who are they? Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon is referring to Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai. Rabbi Lozer ben Shamua. Vehem, and these five people, Hem, Hamid the Torah Osasha. They continued the Torah, they continued the Masorah. And the Masorah that we have stems from pretty much from those five. And so, we're going to get back a little bit to this Gemara, but Rabbi Akiva didn't give up. Even after his 24,000 students died, he continued to teach. Yeah.
Is it Lag BaOmer, the students stopped dying, and that's why we celebrate Lag BaOmer. So, but weren't all of his students dead?
Ah, beautiful question. So you are asking the question of the Pri Chadash in Source 9. So you go to Source 9.
It's a great
question. No, it's a great question. We're getting there. So, the Rama writes, and he's going on the following point, that the Rama mentions that on Lag BaOmer you should have Ktzat Simcha, it's a happy day. We don't say Tachana on it, and the Avelos ends at that point. And the Perek, even though the Gemara Yevamos says that the Perek Acha, it doesn't say the time point when they died, so it's assumed that they stopped dying on Lag BaOmer, and we commemorate and we mourn their loss from Pesach until Lag BaOmer. So you ask the question of the Pri Chadash, which is as follows. What are we happy about? He's going on the fact that we're supposed to be a Sameach on Lag BaOmer. He says, what are we happy about? If it were to be that Rabbi Akiva had 100,000 students, and you know what? So 76,000 of them were spared. Okay, even though, of course, there was tremendous tragedy, which is why we have those Yimei Avelos for the 24,000. But okay, there's Simcha that at least the majority survived, and we are Sameach for them. But he says as follows. He says that the others, there are no others. He says everyone died. And how could we be happy? What's there to celebrate? So let's see the question inside is the way he phrases it. Umeyu yeshle daktik b'simcha zulama. Why do we have the simcha? V'imi shum shapasku milamus. If it's because they stopped dying, mavakach, what is that? Hare lo nishar echa mehem. V'kula mesu. Mativa shal simcha zu. All of them died. What is the simcha that we're celebrating? So he gives the following answer. He says, V'efshar. Shash simcha ki al osam talmidim shahusif. Achar kach Rabbi Akiva shalom mesu ke'ilu. That the simcha is that he gathered five more students. And you know what happened to them? They didn't die. That's the simcha. They didn't die. It stopped. Now, is that a good enough answer? Is that exactly what he means? So, it's explained that what's going on here could be this even what he's saying. Is that imagine, it also like you have to put these statistics to to like a certain frame of reference. If you take like Fenway Park in Boston, Fenway Park fits around 34,000. Imagine 2/3 of Fenway, of a full baseball stadium filled with people. Imagine, let's say, like, so Beacon Theater, I think Beacon Theater is what it's called, in New York City. It's around like 1,500, 2,000 people. Imagine like 11 times that, 12 times that. Imagine like something so intense where, like, can't even imagine what it looks like to see 24,000 people and all of them dying. And especially when you're their Rebbe. And imagine the depression that it could cause for someone like that. Or if it says, like, I'm not teaching anyone ever again. It's not worth it. I put in my time. And yet, what the Rebbe Akiva do? Says, of course I'm going to continue. And it's not like, oh, no, in order for me to be successful, I've got 24,000. He says, every person matters. It could be any individual. 5 students. That's the Masorah that we have. And so, on Lag BaOmer, what we're celebrating is the fact that he had the wherewithal and the intense commitment to the Torah and to HaKadosh Baruch Hu to be able to move on and to be able to start again, to teach this few new students and for those students to now spread it forward. And says, not we don't have it here, but says the Chida, that when did he continue to teach? When did he start teaching those 5 students? So Chida says, Am Lag BaOmer. But I think Chida says, Mamish, that Lag BaOmer of that year. So after all 24,000 died and you had no more students, the next day, let me start teaching a few more students. Let me do what I can. Picks himself up right away.
Don't we see their deaths as like a reflection of his teaching and like something negative potentially that he did?
Oh, so I'll share something with you. So Rabbi Akiva's teaching, his most famous teaching, is you have to all love each other, right? Zekhal Galdeva Torah. You have to learn Chakamocha. And so, not sure if that teaching was said before this, at which his students then violated his klal gadol b'Torah. Certainly, it seems very plausible that that was said after this. He realized some little nevkavo zelazeh that since they weren't nice to each other, and look what that caused. That's a very, very deep mussar. And he says, "Hatorah chakmocha zeh klal gadol Torah." This is the most important thing in Torah. This is the foundation of it. So his teachings are reflective of it, but we don't see any negative or depressing teachings from him. And in fact, he's actually the greatest optimist. Example of the Gemara, where it speaks about how he was walking through the ruins of the Beis HaMikdash with a few other Chachamim, and they saw a fox coming out of the place where the Kosh Kedoshim was, and they started crying. The Kiva started laughing. And he said, "Why are you laughing?" He said, "Why are you crying?" And they said, "We're crying because there's a fox where the Kodesh HaKadoshim was. Like, that seems pretty obvious." So he asked, "Why are you laughing?" He says, "Because if this is what the Nevi'im told us would happen. And if the Nevi'im were correct and they told us, of course, that this would happen, then they are also going to be correct that we know that in the future they're going to be children and elderly people once again sitting and relaxing in Yerushalayim. And that's going to happen again. The Beis Hamikdash in the future is going to be rebuilt." So he's always the optimist, always looking at the cup, the glass half full. And the last source over here is from the Or Gedaliahu, or Gedaliah Shor. Explains that, you know what? Even though right now we're in these days of Sfiras HaOmer, where we're counting and we're growing closer and closer to Shavuos, working on ourselves, he said, sometimes, you know what? Sometimes you have to certainly have that passion. You have to also realize that every single moment matters. And even if someone messes up, and even if someone doesn't do the greatest job in the first half, so you still have more time. You can do what you can. And let's read what he says here. But Lag BaOmer, whose man lechazik et atma. Lag BaOmer is a time to strengthen ourselves. V'yishol lekach limbo me Rebbe Akiva. We have to learn out, like we just saw from Rebbe Akiva. Shemesu lo koftal ve'elef talmidim. There's 24,000 students died. V'yachar kach, and right afterwards, ha'amid chamisha talmidim u'beinehem rashbi sh'al yedem haya hitpatush hitfashtus hator v'yishol. In other words, he gathered 5 students, amongst them, who is the Rashbi, who spread Torah to B'nai Yisrael. And he didn't have yayush. He didn't abandon. He wasn't depressed because of this. He moved on. Cain kol adam asha avru lo hastiros shonim v'nefilos. So too, all of us. Even if we fall, even if we're down, even if things are tough, we have to be able to pick ourselves up. Ein lo litayish. Don't give up. Yukumosh amar rav hakadosh mekaznich. Satzal. The cousin to Rebbe says, when the Torah tells us about Sfira, Amim Macharas Hashviz Tisperu Chamishim Yom. Till the end of the seventh week, so you count, we count for ourselves 50 days. That's Sfira. He says, Sha'afim Kfar Avarlo Kol Hamem Tet Yom Shel Sfira. Even if all 49 days, the 49 days of Sfira are passing, Adain Hu Yachal Berega Echad, in one moment, you could Lahar Bavodasa Kmo Avoda Shel Kol Chamishim Yom. It has the power, one moment, to encapsulate all 50 days. Tisperu chamishim yom. That when you count, it could be the equivalent of chamishim yom of all 50 days. That you could accomplish so much even in a moment. And just like Rabbi Akiva, who was down, and he was, you can imagine everyone she lost, but just picks himself up and begins teaching a little bit more. Is able to have so much hashpa on the rest of Jewish people and the history of the world because of that. That for us, in our lives, that if we're down, if we're down Chas V'Shalom, and we have to pick ourselves up, and we're able to, then for whatever it's worth, every single moment we could accomplish so much. And sometimes we think, you know what, I blew it, I missed it, I missed the opportunity, I wasn't able to do this. And we can look at things as in black or white. And so what's referred to in psychology is something called a cognitive distortion, where our minds are distorted to view as if, like, okay, it's either we're totally great, or if we're not amazing 100%, then we're not doing anything. But life is not about that. Life's about just picking ourselves up, trying our best, and sometimes trying our best, even just in a moment, like Hashem Magid said, trying our best could fulfill, in a certain sense, everything. You could do so much in that moment. Like they say, during the days, the Aser Samichu between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, Rosh Hashanah are two of the 10 days, Yom Kippur is one of the 10 days. So you have 7 days of regular weekdays between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. And the Svarim, the Hasidus, they speak about how each day corresponds to that day throughout the entire year. So Monday, this is to be metaken, this is to fix every Monday for the entire year. And if you do that Monday well, then you can manage to transform the Mondays and do tshuva for all those Mondays. So we have the ability to believe that we could, in a moment, be able to do something, to do a certain action that really is able to have a tremendous hashpah that we can't even imagine is going on in Shamayim. And we should be able to strengthen ourselves to see the fire on Lag BaOmer, to see those bonfires, and to see the passion that we're supposed to have, like the Rashbi had, like Rabbi Akiva had, and to be able to take the Torah that we learn, to learn it, to be excited about it, be excited about mitzvot, to let the people we're around to see the excitement about mitzvot so that it spreads, so that it's contagious. And we should be able to be successful in our Baruch Hashem to just grow and grow higher and higher.